you asked me the question of where he got his information, and that had a lot to do with my understanding of the veracity of his, where I believed what he was telling me was important in terms of American history, because according to the source, the man in charge of the program was Vannevar Bush, who was the head of the Manhattan Project. So there I had been researching and learning all about the Manhattan Project, which was the bid to build the atomic bomb. And, you know, a common preconception is that General Leslie Groves was ahead of the Manhattan Project with Oppenheimer as the lead scientist. But you don't have to dig too deep to figure out that actually Vannevar Bush was in charge of both of them. He was the president's science advisor. He was in charge of a nuclear bomb. And so he was the head of the mother of all black operations. And when I learned from my source that it was Vannevar Bush who was in charge of this program and the follow-on program that's so controversial, according to my source, that involved the equipment and the child-sized aviators from the Roswell crash, the idea that Vannevar Bush was in charge of this project made perfect, sort of terrifying sense to me.
What was the work that the team was doing? What did he describe day to day they were doing with the equipment
and
the bodies?
Well, my source worked on the project for 2 weeks. So the equipment, when it arrived at a hangar, and I describe in the book exactly where it was, sort of northwest of Groom Lake. The source was on a team of 5 engineers that were tasked with taking apart this round-shaped flying craft, allegedly sent by Stalin, taking it apart down to its rivets and nuts and bolts and components, and seeing what made it fly. Getting a sense of how the power plant worked. Now, as far as understanding the technology that made it fly, the source has never purported to have been involved with that. That's other people's interpretations. According to him, it went on to another team at EG&G who was in charge of reverse engineering this hover and fly technology, and according to the source, they were able to figure that out. But he did not have anything to do with that. His work was simply taking it apart and putting it back together.
And the beings?
The beings, very, very uncomfortable discussions about that. You know, I write in the book that what I could get out of him was the description of them, the fact that they were comatose. There were 2 of them, according to him, that came with the equipment. They were comatose but alive. They were hooked up to some kind of life support system. I know that very rudimentary in 1951, and that one of them died shortly after arriving at this hangar to the northwest of Area 51, but that they had very large heads, very big eyes, almost no nose, and that they were, you know, small, and that's why they are called child-sized aviators.
Well, they sure sound like aliens, the classic alien, as you mentioned, and how was it that these beings were created? That's also an interesting part of the story.
Yes, well, remember that what I write in the book, I asked the source at length, what was the point of this? And his answer was that Stalin was aware of the War of the Worlds and its impact and effect on America. We know Hitler was. He referenced it in the speech. But Stalin was most interested in it, in this idea of black propaganda, and that the reason that he sent this flying craft and these grotesquely deformed humans who had been the result of some kind of a horrific human experimentation project, according to the source, who I believe, that this unit and these child-sized aviators had been sent here a la a kind of War of the World hoax, and that it was sent over New Mexico. New Mexico was home to Los Alamos, the nuclear facility, home to Sandia, where we made our weapons, home to the Roswell base, where the 509th Bomb Group, the only bombers that could handle nuclear weapons at the time in 1947 were based, and the idea was to kind of scare the heck out of Americans and at the same time make it very clear to Truman that this was kind of a warning shot over America's bow, over Truman's bow, that we may have had the nuclear bomb in 1947 and the Soviets did not yet, but Stalin had the ability to manipulate people through black operations and black propaganda.
Yeah, that's a really interesting tale that I find, as you and I discussed the other day, I just find has a heck of a lot of holes in it. And I would wonder, and I guess you admit in the book in your notes that your source was told this information, that it might have been a cover story by his boss, that it wasn't a literal story. It was just, and if you look in the Roswell archives, the lore about Roswell, there were many witnesses who say that they were told this stuff came from Russia. Philip Corso writes that was one of the stories that he handed out when he was supposedly distributing Roswell wreckage to national labs. So I'm just wondering how seriously you consider the possibility that your source was given this as a cover story, even though he was working on the inside.
Yes, and that's a very legitimate question, George. And again, I'm neither for nor against, anything in this regard, other than standing by the veracity of what I was told. It's not a false memory. It's not a fantasy. It's the information that I believe to be legitimate from someone who is there.